Let's go ahead and open to Exodus chapter 21, verse number 20, and continue our look at the rules and regulations that God and Moses are going over for the benefit of the Israeli people as they're preparing to go into the Promised Land within the next year and live their lives not as slaves, not as servants anymore, but rather as free people. And so they need to know how to interact with one another in a fair fashion. And some of them need this information more than others because, unfortunately, they don't have a fair mindset. They've got a bad attitude. By the time we're done with the story of the Exodus, we'll know that there's such a bad attitude amongst the majority of this first generation that they're not going to be allowed to go into the Promised Land. I want you to keep in mind that the purpose of the law is because of lawlessness, because of sinful attitudes, and that it was intended to make the Israeli people behave themselves as a nation until the Messiah could come on the scene and really change their hearts as a whole by forgiving their sins and bringing in the Holy Spirit as a real change agent in their hearts. So when we look at this, I think we can gain some principles of how society should act, how we should interact with the people around us and treat them fairly. Again, I'm going to remind you of the New Testament principle that says everything in the law could be summed up in a two-part commandment. Part one, you shall love the Lord with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Part two, you shall love everybody else like you love yourself and treat them as you'd want to be treated. So in the thing that we closed out yesterday, we were talking about what if a couple of guys are going at it and one of them really hurts the other guy. Well, the rule was that the man who did the hurting should have to pay for the loss of the person hurt's time and pay for his medical bills. Well, with that topic in view, we now have to ask the question, what if it's between some slaves, some people who are owed, they owe money to somebody else? So this is what it says, verse 20. When a man strikes his slave, that is the person that he has in an indebtedness contract, because remember, we're never talking about the slavery of the early American period. That was horribly wrong. It was a form of kidnapping and ethnic breeding for slaves that was never acceptable, never. The slavery that we're talking about in the Old Testament and pretty much in the old world was indebtedness slavery. You as a person or your country as a larger group owed money that could not be paid with material possessions. So instead, your service for a determined amount of time was going to be used to pay back that debt. So when a man strikes his indebted slave, whether male or female, with a rod, and the rod, as we read elsewhere in the Old Testament, was an implement of discipline. Think of a paddle. Think of spare the rod, spoil the child. That's the idea that we've got in mind here. So if he strikes his male or female servant with the rod, and the slave dies under his hand, he shall be avenged. So you've got a master that totally loses it. He is so angry that he just wails on his slave until the person dies. Well, guess what? He shall be avenged, meaning the master will be executed because he did not show proper regard and respect for the image of God in that human being that he was beating. That's what it means here, folks. Verse 21, though, says, if the slave survives a day or two, meaning just, and it's not talking about he survives a day or two and then dies. It means that he doesn't die and goes on with his life. It says, he is not to be avenged, for the slave is his money. Now, you remember back in verse number 19, if a person hurts another person and that person loses time from his job, then the person who hurt him has to pay for that lost time and pay for the healing process, that is, pay for the medical bills. Well, if you're talking about the master of a slave being the one that doing the hurting, he's already paying those bills. He pays for the lost time because the guy owes him time anyway, and he is also having to pay out of pocket to take care of his physical being. So that's why it doesn't have anything about those two being paid, because the guy would be basically paying it to himself. Verse number 22, when men strive together, so we're kind of in a theme here, and it may be that that was the topic that Moses and God were talking about, and Moses asks a whole bunch of questions regarding it. When men strive together, that is, they're in a fight, and they hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, and it's actually the fruit of her womb comes out. So she delivers the child early. But there is no harm, meaning nothing other than the baby came early. That's the only thing that happened. So let's suppose this fight was happening around a woman that was within a few days of delivery, maybe a couple of weeks worth of delivery. And the fight spills over and she gets knocked down. She delivers the baby early. What's being said here is the one who hit her shall surely be fined, as the woman's husband shall impose on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. So the husband, the head of the household, the husband of the wife, can go to the judges and demand some sort of financial penalty for the, as we would say, damages or mental anguish that was done to his wife and himself and the baby, because the baby came earlier than was expected, and there was probably a lot of anxiety about the situation. So the judges then listen to the husband's request, and then they decide how much should be paid to make up for that. And there's a lot of these things where the judges, which would be Levites, by the way, are going to make the determination of exactly what should happen, because each case is unique in some way. But it doesn't stop there. Verse 23, but if there is harm, meaning that something else happens either to the woman or to the baby. Okay? And this is one of the passages that I go to when I talk about how important it is to value the unborn life, because unborn life is life, human life, and needs to be treated with the same respect as born life. So if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life. So if the woman died because of this action, the guy that caused it could be executed. If the baby dies, the guy could be executed. And then we have what a lot of people refer to as the lex talentis, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And I know that the old quote from, I think, Gandhi, eye for an eye soon leaves the whole world blind. Well, that tells me that Mr. Gandhi didn't understand what this law was really about, or he was talking about an over-application of it. Because this is not personal vengeance that we're talking about here. This is a judicial decision that if a person puts out somebody else's eye, it is within the court's right to have that person's eye taken as well as a penalty. Now, as you've already seen just recently, the court could assign a monetary substitute for that action. So the guy who put somebody else's eye out could say, please don't put my eye out. I will pay a certain amount of money to make up for my misbehavior, my complete disregard for this other person's eye and how I've taken that away from them for the rest of their life. So eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. The idea is to stifle in people the tendency to not think before they act. What if I get into this fist fight and I put the guy's tooth out? Well, that means he could demand that my tooth be put out, or I might have to pay a penalty for that financially. Maybe I should not punch him in the mouth. See, that's the goal here. It is to stifle misbehavior before it ever happens, because there are severe penalties that could take place if you allow yourself to get out of control. Verse number 26. When a man strikes the eye of his slave, and this is the guy that owes money, that is working it off underneath his leadership or his attendants. So if the man strikes the eye of his slave, male or female, and destroys it, he shall let the slave go free because of his eye. So it's an automatic, the bill is paid in total. Now, I don't know whether or not the slave could then say, hey, I want that guy's eye knocked out. I would guess that the court would probably say something like, no, he's been assessed a big enough a penalty to make up for it because you now are free. You no longer owe any of the debt that was to be paid by you. Goes on, if he knocks out the tooth of his slave, male or female, he shall let the slave go free because of his tooth. The goal is to force those who have indebted slaves underneath their work structure to treat them properly and fairly and not treat them roughly, because you could end up giving up their freedom to them and losing out on the money that was owed. And by the way, some people did buy up slavery contracts. The money was not originally owed to them. They simply bought the indebtedness contract from the person that it was owed to. Change the subject now. Verse 28. So Moses and God go on to another topic. When an ox gores a man or woman to death, and the to death part here is very specific, we will hear goring in other verses coming up that does not include the modifier to death. So it the idea is pushing with force. And since the oxen of this time period tended to have horns, you could be pushed with the head of the beast, and that could hurt you by itself, or it could get its horn into you, and you might get stabbed. And in both cases, you might not die. You might get hurt, or you might get really scared by it, but you might not be killed. And so we'll come back to those possibilities in a moment here. But on this very first one, the idea is the animal actually kills the person by pushing at them with their head and with their horn, and the guy or the woman dies. What happens? The ox shall be stoned. Basically, capital punishment, because the ox killed somebody made in the image of God. And its flesh shall not be eaten, so it can't be benefited from. That is, I had to kill my ox because it killed somebody, but at least I got some steaks out of it. No, you don't get a benefit out of it because the animal killed somebody. But the owner of the ox shall not be liable, and that means not personally liable. The meaning of that will come out in just a moment. Now, let's think about the application in our own modern society. Most people don't have interaction on farms nowadays. But we have an awful lot of incidents, haven't we, of where animals, pets, sometimes dogs, have attacked people and even killed people. Well, this is the principle that would be applied to that sort of situation. If the animal attacks and kills somebody else, it's to be executed. That should be the end of it. Verse 29, but if the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past, meaning that it has pushed at people before, it has tried to hook people with its horns before, and maybe didn't quite get it done. Maybe it didn't kill them, maybe it just hurt them. So it's on record that it has done this before. Or in the example we were using, somebody's dog has actually attacked someone before, maybe didn't kill them, maybe just scared them very badly. It's on the record that it had done this dangerous behavior before. So if the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past and its owner has been warned but has not kept it in and it kills a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned and its owner also shall be put to death. That's how serious God is about protecting the lives of those made in his image and likeness. If you've got an animal that has threatened people in the past and you didn't take the precautions to keep it from hurting anyone, and it does end up killing somebody, by this standard, you are an accomplice in the death. And it was a capital crime. And so what was the effect? People were serious about their animals if they were misbehaving. They might even put them down themselves so that it would never come to it where they could become a part of somebody's death. Verse 30, here is one of the substitute things that we see, and it's kind of in between the lines of a lot of the stuff. We should keep it in the back of the mind that all these cases would come through a court of law. And the court of law would weigh all the individual aspects of this particular case, and then they would use the rules of God and the principles given here to decide exactly how this particular case should be settled. So verse 30, if a ransom is imposed on him, that is the guy who didn't take care of his dangerous animal and it killed somebody, it could be that the family of the dead person would go, we don't want the guy to be killed with his animal. We would rather that he pay damages. So then he shall give for the redemption of his life whatever is imposed on him. So the surviving members of the person's family could ask the judges to put a financial figure as a fine for the person. And then the person would have to meet that according to the court's decision. If he couldn't, by the way, and he didn't want to be executed, he would go into indebted servitude. So he would become a slave himself for whatever period of time to pay that debt off. Except, as a Jew, if the seventh year came around, then his indebtedness would be wiped out just like everybody else's. Verse 31. If it gores a man's son or daughter, he shall be dealt with according to this same rule. So if it happens in the family, doesn't matter. Same rule applies. The animal needs to be executed if it was a first offense. And if it's a second offense, then even the father who had been letting the animal be kind of dangerous will be executed or will have to pay a penalty of some sort to other family members or something, to his own children, for letting it get out of hand. Verse number 32. If the ox gores a slave, male or female, and notice it doesn't say here to death. So it's not an execution that we're talking about. It's actually some sort of physical damage that is done. If the ox gores a slave, male or female, the owner shall give to their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. So the person who has the indebtedness contract of the slave that's hurt is automatically paid 30 shekels of silver. That's 2 months worth of wages. Well, it's actually a little bit more than 2 months worth of wages because it's 60 days wages, 6 days a week. And so that was a pretty severe penalty to be assessed. Verse number 33, change of topic. When a man either opens a pit, that is, he uncovers it, because it already exists and it had a cover over it, and when a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the owner of the pit shall make restoration. He shall give money to its owner, and the dead beast shall be his. Now, there's no explanation as to why this pit is there. It's just that an animal wanders into it, drops into it, breaks its neck because the animal's dead. And so, because it had no barricades around it, it had no mechanism to keep the animal from just falling into it, then he's responsible for the death of the animal. He did not take appropriate precautions. And so he owes money to the person who lost the animal. Continuing, verse 35. When one man's ox butts another so that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and share its price, and the dead beast also they shall share. So it's animals hurting animals. So in this case, it's a first-time offense. So the pushing animal gets sold with the warning that it is a pushing animal. And the dead animal gets cut up and shared between the two parties involved. But, verse 36, if it is known that the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past, and its owner has not kept it in, he shall repay ox for ox, and the dead beast shall be his. So he has to actually give an ox to the man who lost his ox. And it doesn't say it here, but we understand, since it's a repeated offense, the pushing ox is killed. And the guy whose ox that one was basically ends up with two dead oxen. Chapter 22. Let's now move to the topic of theft. That is the taking of property that does not belong to you. The Bible, God, upholds the concept of personal property. And because of that, it is an offense to take that which does not belong to you. Chapter 22, verse 1. If a man steals an ox or a sheep, and then he kills it, or he sells it, he shall repay five oxen for an ox and four sheep for a sheep. So he steals the animal and then disposes of it. He either kills it and eats it, or he sells it off to somebody else, which means he doesn't have that animal anymore. It means that when he does get caught for his crime, that he now owes the owner of the stolen animal 5 times the amount if it's an ox, and 4 times the amount if it's a sheep. Now, if he is caught with it still in his possession, there is a different standard, and we'll get to that in a moment. Verse 2, if a thief is found breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no blood guilt for him. So what we have here is this sort of scenario. You're in your house. It's dark. Because remember, back at that time, they didn't have electric lighting and things like that. And it took a lot of effort to get light in the middle of the night. So you hear a noise. And you go in the other room. And you've got your sword in your hand because it sounds like somebody breaking in. Or maybe you got your spear in your hand. And you see a shape in the coming through the window. And you're scared for your life, and you strike out, and you end up killing the person. Well, that's not murder. And therefore, you are not responsible for that person's death. Because you were in the dark, and they were where they didn't belong. And it was their own fault that they got killed. However, it changes if there was light involved. If the sun has risen on him, then there will be blood guilt for him. Now, I'm looking at my clock here. We're pretty much out of time, and I really want to spend more time on this. So let's mark our place right here and get back into the Word tomorrow.